just standing there. And I thought I was only dreaming, yeah.
Hi, can you hear me?
I kissed you then.
Okay, great. Hi, this is Dr. Daniels, and welcome to Healing with Dr. Daniels. This is Sunday, October 2nd, oh my goodness, 2016. And tonight's topic is doctors, strikes, and mortality. Could a doctor strike save your life? That's an interesting question. And to answer that question, there's two sources. One is, of course, just public news reports, but even more telling is the medical industrial complex's response and defense. In other words, what does the medical industrial complex say to these reports? And of course, what are the reports? And as always, what can you do? What should you do? So it wouldn't be complete without giving you hopeful information on how to solve what might at first appear to be something a bit discouraging. So first, we're going to take a look at the news reports. And I'm going to take a look at a very positive medical industrial complex friendly report source. So in other words, we're going to get this from the mouth of a source that is totally sympathetic with the medical industrial complex. This is important. And so what is our source? Our source is the City University of New York.edu, Social Sciences Department. Okay, so this is a government-run university. So, of course, they're going to, more likely than not, take positions that are consistent with and supportive of government policies. So we're going to start with something that's very, very, very pro-doctor. And quite frankly, to make the case here, we don't even need to go to any anti-doctor sources. So we're going to stick with the sources that are in favor of doctors. Okay. So this compendium was amassed by and published by the City University of New York. And this is Medical Ethics. And it's, the title is Moral Climate of Health Care. Okay, so let's take a look. So death rate drops during doctor strike. This is a section 6 assigned reading for the course. So this is refers to bypass surgery data, June 10th, 2000. Issues of the British Medical Journal reports an interesting statistic that has occurred in Israel. It seems that 3 months ago, physicians in public hospitals implemented a program of sanction in response to a labor dispute over a contract proposal by the government. The article stated that the Israel Medical Association began an action in March to protest against the Treasury's, that means money, proposed imposition of a new 4-year wage contract for doctors. We can only guess that the wage contract was not favorable. Since then, the medical doctors have canceled hundreds of thousands of visits to outpatient clinics and have postponed tens of thousands of elective operations. So to find out whether the industrial action was affecting deaths in the country, the Jerusalem Post, we're guessing a Jerusalem newspaper, interviewed non-profit-making Jewish burial societies, which perform funerals for the vast majority of Israelis. The veteran director of Jerusalem's burial society said, "The number of funerals we have performed has fallen drastically." In other words, they darn near put the funeral people out of business by going on strike. This is serious. Manager of the funeral parlor, which buries most other residents of Jerusalem, declared with much more certainty, "There definitely is a connection between the doctors' sanctions," that means strikes, "and fewer deaths. We saw the same thing in 1983 when the Israeli Medical Association applied sanctions for 4.5 months. Shocking. So in response, the Director General of the medical organization offered his own explanation. "Well, death is not the only measure of harm to health." It may not be the only measure, but there are a lot of people who think it's a pretty darned important measure. I mean, if doctors coming to work means more people die, I think that's certainly a measure worth paying attention to. So what does he say? He goes on to say, elective surgery can bring about a great improvement in a patient's condition, but it can also mean disability and death to the weakest patients. In other words, what this doctor is saying is, I mean, he didn't deny it. He didn't say, well, death rates didn't go down. He's saying, let's not measure death. Let's measure something else. And then he concedes, well, okay, elective surgery can cause death in the weakest and more disabled patients. Okay, so what we have here is a weak admission and a request not to measure death. Death is not a valid measure of effectiveness for a medical system, and it's not a valid endpoint measure for patients. This is what the doctor association said. In other words, no denial. Okay, so what's the next one? This is Dr. Cause Disease, Silver Bulletin, E! News Magazine. One of the most common causes of disease, if not the most common cause, is conventional medical doctors. Sad, but too often true. The medical term coined to describe this problem is iatrogenic disease, from the Greek iatros, meaning physician, and genesis, meaning origin. Thus, we have Dr. Cause Disease. Specifically, any adverse reaction. Now, wait a minute. That means side effects from medications would be a doctor-caused disease. And we know, this is a statistic by the medical industrial complex, 25% of all patients experience a doctor-caused disease from medications that they take. Okay. And, of course, they say here either major or minor, or an adverse reaction to a medical or surgical treatment. So the late Dr. Mendelsohn, while chairman of the Medical Licensing Committee for the state of Illinois, wrote, "The greatest danger to your health is the doctor who practices modern medicine. I believe that modern medicine's treatments for disease are seldom effective." Now, let's back this up. This is the chairman of the Medical Licensing Committee for the state of Illinois. Okay. So he believes modern medicine's treatments for disease are seldom effective, and they're often more dangerous than the diseases they are designed to treat. And this is Dr. Mendelsohn still talking. "I believe that more than 90% of modern medicine could disappear from the face of the earth, doctors, hospitals, drugs, and equipment, and the effect on our health would be immediate and beneficial." Okay. So here we have another strike in 1976. Doctors on strike. "Whenever medical doctors go on strike, a most interesting event occurs. Death rates go down. In 1976, in Bogota, Colombia, medical doctors went on strike for 52 days. With only emergency care available, the death rate dropped by 35%. In other words, only emergency care available, which means you can infer that a lot of people, even seriously ill people, didn't get care because only emergency care was available. And in 1976, in Los Angeles County, a similar doctor strike resulted in an 18% drop in mortality. As soon as the strike was over, the death rate went back to normal. And then this refers to the Israeli strike. A 50% decrease in mortality occurred in Israel in 1973 when there was a one-month doctor strike. Aha. And so we have healthcare cutbacks. Since the early 1980s, we've heard a lot about the impact of managed care and healthcare cutbacks. Medical doctors and political liberals are screaming that people are dying for lack of services. Actually, just the opposite is true. Since the downsizing of conventional medical services in the 80s, life expectancy has made a massive jump in both the U.S. and Canada. No drug therapy and surgical technique can be shown to have statistically increased the general life expectancy. And this is an important understanding, because when I was at Harvard University as an undergraduate, and this would be 1977, I went to the Widener Library. This is one of the most famous and more complete libraries in the world. And this is before the internet, so they had a lot of stuff there. And I was getting pretty darn good grades at Harvard, and it was pretty obvious to me that I was going to get admitted to medical school. So I wanted to make sure that I had a plan for being effective when I went back to my little ghetto so I could provide care that would be very effective and help improve people's health, improve their quality of life, and their length of life. So I went and looked for books on the topic. And I was horrified by what I found. And what I found was that medical care at no point in history, at no place on the globe, has ever been shown to improve either quality or length of life. It was simply irrelevant at best. And instead, things like clean water, adequate clean food, shelter from weather and elements were the things that caused improved quality of life, improved length of life. This was very distressing to me at the time because, of course, by now I had already invested a good 2 years at Harvard in my pre-medical courses. And so I decided, well, look, I'm pretty far into this. You know, I'm definitely going to be successful. So it just looks like going to medical school will just be one of the ways that I'm going to make a contribution. So I'm going to go to medical school, learn as much as I can, consider what it is that they're teaching, but realize that it might not be as effective as I thought, and I might need to do other things in addition to that. So so around this time, they're mentioning the 80s. So in the 70s, I was at Harvard undergraduate and found that by just searching the library, it concurred with what's being said here, which is that no drug therapy or surgical technique can be shown to have statistically increased the general life expectancy. This is pretty shocking when you consider what's being spent on the whole thing. He said, no generation has had its life expectancy increase significantly since medical doctors began using chemical treatments. That would be 1930-something. Researchers found that medical intervention only accounted for between 1 and 3.5% of the increase in the average lifespan in the United States since 1900. In other words, there is no evidence that medical therapy, modern medicine, has added even a year to anyone's life since 1900. That's shocking when you consider the time and expense people spend getting screening tests, getting checkups, taking drugs, filling prescriptions, and so on. And so then we have the dangerous drugs topic. So Alternative Cancer Treatment Authority, Dr. Moss, notes that a 1999 article in the Journal of the American Medical Association, this is a respected medical journal, stated that prescription drugs kill over 100,000 people per year in the United States hospitals. Now, notice they only mentioned or measured what was happening in hospitals. They didn't even capture the outpatient deaths. So the FDA noted that back in 1978, 1.5 million Americans were hospitalized as a result of taking medical drugs. And one in seven hospital beds is taken up by patients suffering from adverse drug reactions. Now, to really understand this, you have to understand that hospitals only have a 5% profit margin, and that if hospital bed occupancy drops by 5%, then that would put most hospitals in a deficit situation and cause them to close. And one in seven represents at least 14%. So if doctors stopped poisoning people with drugs and no one had to go to the hospital because of an adverse drug effect, then literally the hospital industry would shut down. And so just on the basis of economics, this is a problem that hospitals can literally not afford to address. And of course, one hand washes the other. So the doctors have to prescribe these deadly drugs, and then of course they go into the hospital to be treated for the drug reactions or side effects or iatrogenic disease. So the General Accounting Office, that's a big office in the United States that counts things, stated that 51.5% of all drugs introduced between 1976 and 1985 had to be relabeled because of serious adverse reactions found after the marketing of these drugs. Reactions like heart, liver, kidney failure, birth defects, blood disorders, respiratory arrest that usually ends in death, seizures, and blindness. So half of all drugs introduced between 76 and 85 had to be relabeled. And for me, I was practicing in private practice from 1990 to 2000, and I was just floored at the number of drugs that had black box warnings applied to them during that time period. And as a doctor, you think, oh, the FDA is checking for safety. And with all these black box warnings popping up, you're like, whoa, no one's checking for safety. And so then as a doctor, I became very reluctant to use any newfangled drug. So, drug company bribery. This is interesting. I would just like to say that now, more than ever, most doctors graduate from medical school seriously in debt. And even with their apparently high salaries, have difficulty not only making ends meet, but feeding themselves and their family. And when I was in medical school, in order to get through medical school, I literally ate every other day. So you can imagine how I felt when the drug companies came by with a tray of cold cuts and tomatoes and lettuces and all kinds of stuff. And so one can't help but be slightly appreciative. But actually, to be honest with you, a lot of times I didn't get around to eating because the cold cut tray wasn't on my floor, or I was busy doing something I couldn't get away. But even in medical school, I thought, gosh, that's awfully nice of them to bring cold cuts. So most people are not aware that drug companies spend thousands of dollars per year on each doctor selling them on using their particular products. Drug companies hire detail men to visit doctors' offices and give them drug samples. It's true. These salesmen, who are not doctors and have no medical or pharmacological training, tell your medical doctor what drugs to use for what problems. Drug companies start this process early by offering medical students gifts, free trips to conferences, and free educational material, which translated means propaganda on that drug company's products. Now, and again, as I said, food, providing food to a starving medical student is is fairly influential. One thing that happened when I was in medical practice was they would actually tell my receptionist what drugs I should be using and tell my receptionist all the good things about their drug and leave her gifts. And so the drug rep would be gone because I was busy, right, seeing patients, couldn't fit the drug rep in. And then my receptionist would repeat the drug rep's spiel to me. I had to tell my receptionist, whoa, whoa, back up. You do not tell me what to prescribe. You haven't seen the patients. You have no idea. And you don't even know if what this drug rep's telling you is true. In the future, one, do not accept gifts from drug reps. Two, do not repeat to me anything they say. That's it. If they want to leave some literature, they can. My receptionist, now that I've closed the medical practice, she actually went back to school to become a nurse. Yes, and she's now aspiring to teach at nursing school because she doesn't want to have to deal with patients. Interesting. If you're back, we'll talk about...
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, A visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Hi, folks. In a world of GMO, genetically modified organisms, that is, chemicals, processed foods, and a healthcare system that's unraveling like a cheap suit, it's time to prepare. God created herbs, and herbs help man. Our body can heal itself, just sometimes we need assistance. You need some help? GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Our mild detox is quite powerful with its unique blend of 8 different herbs. And if you're looking for more, our non-GMO supplements will help you with different needs you might have. Health should be a top priority. Take care of your health naturally. Log on to GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Give your body a treat. Let the herbs do their thing naturally. Read all the testimonies on the website. GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Sickness and viruses are like intruders, and herbs are like warriors. Let the tea work for you. That's GetTheTea.com.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Me, take away my name, take away hands on me.
Hi, this is Dr. Daniels, and welcome back to Healing with Dr. Daniels. Okay, we're talking about doctor strikes and death rates. Could a doctor strike save your life? So let us see. So drug company bribery is what we're talking about. And in Australia, drug companies spend an average of $10,000 per year per physician marketing their products. The result of all this is a massive overprescribing of drugs. Now, I can certainly say that when I was in medical practice, I got so many invitations from drug companies to the ultra-high-end restaurants in Syracuse, New York. And I could even bring my whole family, my 3 children, welcome as well. And so, of course, that would be an evening I didn't have to cook, didn't have to clean up. And if I wanted to, I could have gone out every single night of the week, certainly Monday through Saturday. So what happened, though, was, first of all, I just didn't have time. So I think the highest we ever got was maybe one drug rep dinner twice a month for me and the kids. But what happened was I started using natural methods in my practice, which meant I just stopped prescribing the drugs. And so the drug reps found out, because doctors are tracked and the information is reported back to the drug companies, how much of each drug each doctor prescribes each month, and even is compared year-to-date comparisons. And so the drug reps realized I was not prescribing their drugs, even though they were talking to me about it, chatting about it, feeding me all this awesome food. At the time, I was vegan, too, so I was just basically eating a salad, so it really wasn't that big a deal to me. So what they did was they stopped issuing me invitations. So I didn't get any more invitations to these fancy restaurants. And and they actually stopped coming by the office, which was awesome, because guess what happened? There was more space for patients, and I started seeing more patients and making a lot more money. And so what doctors don't realize is just how much these drug reps were actually reducing their revenue and reducing their income. And you don't have to refuse to see a drug rep. You just have to stop prescribing their drugs. And since they get the feedback reports, it takes care of itself. And so I would say easily $10,000 per year per doctor is about right. And so drug companies don't stop with just prescribing practicing doctors, though. They also direct major dollars towards hospitals, medical schools, and supposedly independent research institutions. And so what happened, and I could see it in 1979 to 83 when I was in medical school, is the drug companies were actually funding the medical school. So they were funding research at the medical school. They were paying the professors. And so this was a serious conflict of interest. And when I say conflict of interest, I mean the professors were actually teaching us medical students only what the drug companies want us to hear. And it was the appearance that we were receiving this neutral education that would allow us to protect the interests of our patients, when actually it was just the opposite. Nothing could be further from the truth. So medical schools, they mention here, are giving grants for clinical trials, pharmaceutical research, even buildings. These companies have sought to gain massive influence over medical teaching institutions by spreading their money around. And this is a doctor at the University of California. And he says, pharmaceutical companies, by enlisting the aid of influential academic physicians, have gained control of the practice of medicine in the United States. They now set the standards of practice by hiring investigators to perform studies which establish the effectiveness of their products or impugn that of their competitors. Now, to say this started in the 70s, the 80s, or even the 60s is I think, silliness. This began at the very beginning when Rockefeller financed the Flexner Report to indicate that only drugs were effective. And so this has a very long history, as I say, from the beginning. And even in medical school, we were told, we have the Flexner Report to thank. Without the Flexner Report, there would never have been established a system of licensure in each of the states. There would never have been established the preeminence and superiority of medical schools, of medical doctors, and of pharmaceuticals. And so that's really where things began, 1911, with the Flexner Report. And so for these doctors to say that this stuff began, or that the drug companies took over, is missing the point that the drug companies actually created the medical schools and really created the whole field of medicine as we know it today. Hazards of hospitalization. This is very important. And so again, a doctor strike, what happens? Since doctors admit people to the hospital, fewer people are admitted to the hospital. And so to understand how this would reduce the death rate, you have to take a look at hazards of hospitalization. So hospitals are a hotbed of iatrogenic disease. Every year, 2 million people are admitted to hospitals with one health problem and end up with another health problem. According to Dr. Mendelsohn, and this is Dr. Mendelsohn wrote this book a long time ago. So we come back, we'll find out more about what Dr. Mendelsohn said.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Yeah. You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and of course you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage, highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at NumanaRepublic.com. That's NumanaRepublic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today. Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Give such delight. We all leave before morning light.
Hi, this is Dr. Daniels, and welcome back to Healing with Dr. Daniels. And we're talking about the hazards of hospitalization. So, this is absolutely really the kernel of the matter, because when doctors go on strike, people are not admitted to hospitals, certainly not for elective procedures, because of course doctors are on strike and they refuse to do it. And so hospitals are in a hotbed of iatrogenic disease. Every year, 2 million people admitted to the hospital with one health problem end up with another. According to Dr. Mendelsohn, doctor-caused illnesses kill as many as 20,000 people a year. This is years ago, so he had the number pretty low. A study in the Southern Medical Journal reported that 1 in 5 patients admitted to a university hospital acquires an iatrogenic disease. That's 20%. And 1 in 30 of these lead to death. Of these iatrogenic deaths, half are complications of drug therapy, and 10% result from improper diagnostic procedures. Now, this is something people don't really appreciate, is most diagnostic procedures carry a death rate. So if you're getting an MRI and dye is being injected, if you're having a tube put up your butt, you can get perforations and the infections and stuff from that can kill you. Pretty much every diagnostic procedure has a death rate associated with it. And so obviously when doctors are on strike and these diagnostic procedures are not ordered, then more people live. Another study of 815 consecutive patients at a university hospital. Now, university hospitals, these are hospitals that are supposed to be more competent than other hospitals. Over an eight-month period, found that 36% had disease caused by their doctor. In 2% of the cases, the iatrogenic disease was believed to be a cause of the patient's death. Yeah. And if you project that figure out, assuming a 2% of all hospital patients die from an iatrogenic disease, you get 700,000 hospital doctor-caused deaths per year, one-third of all deaths. Again, these are just hospitals. There are people who die as an outpatient due to prescribed medications, and so they are not counted in this number, which is 700,000. Now, if 2% of all hospital patients die from iatrogenic disease, you have to understand that hospitalized patients generally die at the rate of 2.3%. So, in other words, most of hospital deaths are iatrogenic. Hospital infections, another source. Now, again, these are all doctor, more or less, doctor-friendly sources. And we're going to have at the end here a summary from a doctor-friendly source. Okay, hospital infections. In the 1840s, Dr. Semmelweis directed a teaching hospital in Vienna, where 75% of the women giving birth were dying. He observed that doctors went from dissecting cadavers to delivering babies without washing their hands. Dr. Semmelweis made the radical policy change of requiring doctors to wash their hands before delivering a baby. An amazing thing happened. The death rate dropped 15-fold. Unfortunately, his arrogant colleagues could not see the connection, so they dismissed him and ostracized him. The rejection ultimately drove Semmelweis to death in an insane asylum. Now, you have to get details on this one. So Dr. Semmelweis said, okay, I will go to the cadavers and I will do a dissection. Then I will cut my finger, and you will see that I will get infected and die. And that's what happened. He got an infection. He developed a fever, as it usually happens with fevers, and sepsis. As he developed delirium, they put him in an insane asylum, and of course he died there. And his death from this infection actually got the attention of his colleagues, and they then started washing their hands. But doctors are enlightened nowadays about sanitation, aren't they? A 1981 study of washing habits in intensive care units found only 28% of the doctors washed between patients in a teaching hospital and only 14% washed in the private hospital, Dr. Mendelson noted. So sanitary practices, now washing between patients is different from washing when you go from the cadaver room dissecting dead bodies to when you go to working with live patients. So what they've done in modern times is you have pathologists who are confined to dealing with dead patients and dead body parts. And so doctors don't go from the cadaver room or autopsy room to the rest of the hospital. That doesn't happen because of the specialization. And so these comparisons are not exactly apples to apples. The sanitary practice of medical personnel are often abominable, and the hospital staff, hospital itself is probably the most germ-laden facility in town. This is true. If you'd like to catch an infection, the place to go is the hospital. In fact, we were admonished in medical school that you should never, ever admit a person to the hospital unless you are pretty certain that they would die if they were not admitted. And this is because the probability of death for an admitted patient is so much higher due to complications that happen that you're better off treating anything and everything you can as an outpatient. Of course, I never clarified this, but I heard it enough times in medical school that I took their word for it. So your chances of getting an infection in the hospital are 1 in 20. with, this is old numbers, 15,000 people dying annually from hospital-acquired infections. That number now is close to 100,000. You'll hear quotations of 23,000 because they'll be talking about MRSA. You'll hear a quotation of 15,000 talking about C. difficile. And so they split it up by different organisms, but you add it back up and it comes out to about 100,000. And so what's happened then is people are given the impression that hospital-acquired infections are under control when actually there's little evidence of that. And so the hospital is a hazard due to the side effects and complications of therapy and because people get infections there. Doesn't stop there, but there's surgery. And so Dr. Arthur Mannix declared in an article in the New York State Journal of Medicine, okay, doctor-friendly publication, errors in judgment or technique concerning either the anesthesia or the surgery, or a combination of the two, contribute to close to 50% of the deaths in the operating room. So 50% of the deaths in the operating room would not happen if there is a different judgment or a different technique used by the surgeon or anesthesiologist. This is huge. So obviously, if you have elective surgery, and people do die in elective surgery, and if you stop all elective surgery, first of all, no one would have died for missing a surgery. That's why it's called elective, because you can elect to have it or not have it. So 100% of elective surgery would result in live, living people, if not done. But the death rate that happens when that surgery does take place, at least 50% of it, is due to errors in judgment and technique on the part of the doctor doing the surgery. So obviously, when elective surgery is canceled, 100% of those people who would have died do not die. And so clearly the death rate would have to go down. And so, of course, Dr. Mannix says that 20% of all surgery is unnecessary. But if we go and take a look at Barbara Starfield's report in the year 2000, she says 30% of all surgery is unnecessary. So the amount of unnecessary surgery going on is actually increasing. So there are 2.4 million unnecessary operations annually. This unnecessary surgery results in 12,000 unnecessary deaths each year. Obviously, since it's not 20%, it's 30%, that number is probably closer to 18,000 unnecessary deaths each year just from unnecessary surgery. We haven't even talked about elective surgery. So another study showed that when a second specialist was consulted, 18% of the time, he disagreed with doing the surgery. Now that we have a tighter grip on the standard of care and more uniformity, it's much less likely that you're going to get a dissenting opinion when you get a second opinion. So hysterectomies are the most common operation today, with nearly 1 million done per year. In six New York hospitals, 43% of their hysterectomies were found on review to have been unjustified. My mother had one of those. Women with abdominal bleeding or abnormal bleeding from the uterus or heavy menstrual blood flow were given the operation, though other treatments, or none at all, would have worked just as well. Protecting yourself from doctors. And this is Dr. Mendelsohn talking again. Now, he is a, or was a physician. And so he says, doctors in general should be treated with about the same degree of trust as used car salesmen. And he says, caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. Do not assume your doctor knows everything or that he or she necessarily knows what's best for you. Use your doctor like your lawyer or CPA, someone to give you counsel when you're making the final decision. Now, what your doctor does know is how to keep his license. What your doctor does know is the standard of care. And so most people don't consult the doctor to find out how he should keep his license or to find out what the standard of care is. What they really want to know is what could they do to best meet their particular objectives. And that's not something a doctor is trained in considering. The other thing I mentioned is don't panic with sickness. Sickness is an opportunity to learn about your body's needs and to seek God's direction. Now, this is a fancy way of saying that most sicknesses will actually go away by themselves. Avoid treating symptoms. There would be little iatrogenic disease if people were not so intent on treating symptoms. Instead, you must get down to root causes, which usually means a lifestyle change. Don't quick fix your pain. Now, this pain is a huge thing because pain is a number one reason people go to the emergency room. And whether they give you painkillers that you get hooked on and that kill you, that are more dangerous than heroin, or whether they give you a surgery that you don't need, it's all the same. It leads to death. And most pain, believe it or not, is temporary. And they've actually done research on narcotics, that pain treated with narcotics actually lasts a lot longer. So this person advises, this is Dr. Mendelsohn, get over the idea that pain is something that has to be eliminated at any cost. That view encourages a lot of symptom treatment and resulting iatrogenesis, or doctor-induced illness. Pain is a warning that something's wrong. Again, seek to fix the underlying cause, and that will fix the pain. Seek appropriate healthcare services. The old saying says, never ask a barber if you need a haircut. So, don't expect anything but a prescription drug for symptoms when you see a medical doctor. If you see a surgeon, you can expect he's going to recommend surgery. So, if you want to deal with underlying causes, go to the appropriate natural medical doctor. And this person, I think, erroneously says, if you have an emergency situation or some type of acute problem, conventional medicine is best equipped to deal with that. I don't agree. There's absolutely really no evidence to that end at all. And so here we have is the physician's rebuttal. When doctors go on strike, does the death rate go down? And he says, I have come across a number of seemingly credible reports suggesting that every time doctors go on strike, the overall death rate goes down, in some cases quite precipitously. Can you ascertain if this is in fact the case or if some other factors are at work here? And so this is Cecil Adams responding, and he says, well, as we'll see below, it's not really so surprising that mortality statistics sometimes show a drop during a doctor's strike. What's staggering is that a reasonable person could see such stats and for even an instant think, holy crap, those doctors are killing us. Okay, so let's see if we can get some logic going here. It's not surprising that mortality statistics sometimes show a drop during a doctor's strike. Well, if mortality statistics show a drop during a doctor's strike, it is reasonable to say, holy crap, those doctors are killing us. And so Cecil goes on to defend the medical industrial complex. Sure, there'll always be a few alternative medicine fringe dwellers who genuinely see the medical establishment as some sinister cabal presiding over a high-density feedlot of human misery. But the way this fact about doctors' strikes gets passed around suggests that a lot more people are a little more nuts than you'd want to imagine. Okay, so we read quite a few studies about these doctor strikes, and their numbers are pretty compelling. I mean, when you ask the morticians, hey, how's business? And they say, man, it's terrible. The doctors are on strike and nobody's dying. I think it's pretty straightforward. And so what Cecil says is no one's suggesting that changes in the availability of doctors would not affect what happens to their patients in the short term. A study from last May, for instance, found that in both Australia and the U.S., birth rates decreased from 1 to 4% on days when OBGYNs held their annual conferences. So obviously, the doctors were not doing C-sections, and that's why the birth rates decreased. And we know C-sections are always related with a certain amount of death of a mother. So again, we could expect that maternal death rates would go down when the OBGYNs were not working. But looking over the data on doctor strikes, it's hard to see where the doctors are saving many lives by staying out of the operating room. And so he's going to take a second look at these studies we just reviewed. One example often cited is that of a month-long strike by Los Angeles County physicians in 1976, during which the mortality rate for patients was seen to drop by 18%. But a 1979 study in the American Journal of Public Health showed the overall death rate remained unchanged, as enough personnel remained on duty to handle the real emergencies. Any seeming benefit to patients' health likely resulted from about 11,000 fewer operations. Now, any seeming benefits. The benefit, he says there is a benefit, resulted from 11,000 fewer operations. Well, wait a minute. I thought doctors just did operations to benefit people. So how could patients' health benefit by not having 11,000 operations? And so this was typical, meaning that an estimated 50 to 150 patients who could have been expected to die did not. All right. So what he's saying is the death rate must have gone down because 10,000 fewer operations were being performed, and at least 150 people did not die, who would have died had the doctors come to work. Talk more about this when we get back. Try and sort through this.
You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and, of course, you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage, highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at numanarepublic.com. That's NUMANARepublic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Do you have difficulty taking supplements? Are you searching for a high-quality, complete nutritional drink that your whole family will love? NutriMedical's Life Support has arrived. All of your daily nutritional requirements in one quick, delicious drink. Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support is a proprietary blend of vegan protein, activated vitamins, essential minerals, amino acids, probiotics, green tea, digestive enzymes, anti-inflammatories, cancer prevention, detoxification, and much more. Your body will high-five you for this one. Life Support is the best complete nutrition meal replacement on the market. Whether you are an elite athlete, have post-operative challenges, chronic illness, elderly, or a family that just wants a quick, delicious drink, try Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support for optimized nutrition in one great-tasting smoothie. Just add cold water, almond milk, fruit, or anything else you like. NutriMedical's Life Support. Try our great-tasting chocolate or vanilla today. Call 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutriMedical.com. NutriMedical.com for the whole family.
Hi, this is Dr. Daniels, and welcome back to Healing with Dr. Daniels. Okay, so we're talking about, could a medical strike save your health? And it's looking like possibly it could. So we're going over now is the rebuttal of the pro-doctor faction. And so what they're saying is it may appear that the deaths went down because 10,000 fewer elective surgeries are done, in which case 150 fewer people die because those surgeries were canceled. Well, duh. What he's saying is, yes, the death rate went down. Okay. So let's go to the four-month Israeli doctor's strike. Was found to have some definable effects on public health. The percentage of cesarean sections increased somewhat. And one study suggested hypertension patients might have received worse treatment, but no impact on mortality. Well, how can the therapy be said to have been worse and the death rate did not go up? And so again, this is a pretty subjective measure because how do we know that the treatment was worse? Nonetheless, the popular wisdom says the work stoppage as a disaster. A detailed study of public perception afterward found that nearly one in four urgent care patients felt the strike had resulted in major health problems. So a detailed report of public perception, because they measured perception, they didn't measure any actual concrete outcome, but perception was the patients felt, in other words, believed, that the strike resulted in major health problems, obviously with other people, not with them. So again, we have here, this is a subjective perception they're working on. 1984 doctor strike in Finland mainly meant fewer visits for colds and stomach aches. No significant harmful effects to the public were seen. Research found the uptick in visits after doctors returned to work suggested patients were glad to have them back. Again, we don't see where any harm was done by the strike in 1984. Although patients or doctors remain popular with their patients, which is nice. Another key example used to support the proposition that fewer doctors means fewer deaths comes from a June 2000 article in the British Medical Journal written during another Israeli strike. The author reported that in the 3 months after doctors walked out, death rates fell significantly in affected cities. However, her data was by no means the result of scientific study, but consisted mostly of anecdotal reports from funeral home directors who claimed they'd seen the same thing in 83. What is known is that as in the LA strike, many thousands of elective surgeries were postponed, but emergency rooms and chronic care departments remained open. So, in other words, we're going to believe the subjective reports of patients who are glad to have their doctors back, but we're not going to believe the personal reports of morticians who say that business fell. That's pretty objective. That, hey, business is down. Those doctors need to get back to work or we're going to go out of business. It's pretty straightforward, I think. Nothing subjective about that. And so in 2003, a SARS outbreak closed four hospitals in Toronto, and all non-emergency services were suspended. Among other things, this led to the canceling of half of joint replacement surgeries, 40% of cardiac surgeries, and 93% of many outpatient procedures. The result? We'll find out when we get back.
I saw you there, just standing there. I thought I was only dreaming, yeah. Then once again, you said you would come.
Hi, my name is Chris. Since the 1970s, I have been actively making products available that support good health. What makes my juices flow is helping mankind get healthy. Today, I'm going to tell you about a product that will help your juices to flow. I am excited to recommend Dr. Miller's Holy Tea to you. Even if we are eating a clean diet, these impurities are entering our bodies. Holy Tea moves these poisons that are creating havoc with our health out of our bowels. It works on the whole digestive system. The five tasty herbs are combined to provide an amazing detoxifying and healing tea that will rid your body of the pollutants and soothe your digestive tract, and in some cases, help you lose weight. It is critical for our health to move all of the environmental toxins from our bodies. The Holy Tea can do that. As a hydrocholine therapist, remember, with every BM, you're supporting RBN. www.holytea.org. 800-326-2001.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.